Thanks, everyone. I'm Megan. I currently work at Curtin University, as we said, but previously worked at the Aboriginal Health Council for a couple of years working on the Young Leaders Project.
Hey, everyone. My name's Layla Wally, and I work at the Aboriginal Health Council of WA as the Peer Educator Project Officer, and I'm a Badimaya Yamaji Balladong Noongar woman born and raised here in Perth.
Okay, so I'm just going to give you a bit of an overview of the Young Leaders program that we're here to talk to you about today. So the program is funded by the WA Department of Health and provides education about youth health issues. It supports participants to encourage their peers to engage in healthy behaviours. So the training is aimed at any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander young person aged between 16 and 25 years. And it teaches young leaders or peer educators to talk to their peers about mental health, drugs and alcohol, healthy relationships and sexual health. The young leaders are then supported by the project coordinator, which is currently Layla, to organise community education sessions for their peers, and they're paid $200 for each session that they run. All participants receive a certificate of completion, a training and work experience summary, and they're linked in with other training and development opportunities. And the program's currently being rolled out in three locations, Geraldton, Newman, and here in Perth.
So I'm just going to briefly go over the training topics that we cover and how we try to do it holistically. So firstly, it's important to acknowledge the need to deliver the training in a culturally considerate way. We do this by ensuring that at least one facilitator is Indigenous, and we include lots of culturally appropriate resources all throughout the training. So we kick it off by discussing who is your mob. Everyone introduces themselves, introduces their mob, tells everybody who they're connected to, and this is all just about connection, connecting the people in the room, making sure everyone is comfortable and, you know, says their piece about their mob. They might not even know it, because I've come across some instances where people have found relatives in the room. They're sitting right by a cousin or like an auntie on their mum's side or something like that. And we hope this makes everyone in the room feel comfortable and more willing to engage, because they know that the people there in the room, they are connected to some way or another. We then do an activity with the aim to draw on the people's main strengths that they draw from their community and that from their family. We then go into discussing anxiety, depression, and other common mental health conditions. After discussing this, we like to play a video. It's made by Headspace. It's a very upbeat song, and it's made by Aboriginal people for Aboriginal people, and it's quite a positive transition away from those heavy topics. We then talk about what services are available in their specific regions. So we try to get them to engage with their local AMSs, mental health services, and even online services. We mention this to wrap it up and tie everything together, and we do this at the end of each of the four topics. We spend a lot of time on this topic specifically because it builds the foundations of the training and it mentions culture a lot, so it gets people feeling even more comfortable. So the next topic we go into is alcohol and other drugs. So we start this off by just brainstorming different ways that AOD can affect someone's life, and we do that by covering the seven L's, which is livelihood, land, law, loss, lover, liver, and that covers all the health issues, and law. So that's just all the different aspects that affects a person's life when they become involved in AOD, and how to help someone get out of it or how to help a family member access help. We also talk about the safe use of needles, and this is the first point of the discussion where we mention bloodborne viruses. So at this point, it's just to get people thinking about BVVs and have it at the back of their mind, because we'll go back to it later on. Lastly, we wrap up with reiterating how each person can help their peers in need and where to go to access that. The next topic is healthy relationships, and this is a topic we cover fairly briefly. We start by discussing how to identify red flags within close relationships and how to identify controlling behaviours. We do a case study together where we discuss what appropriate and inappropriate behaviours or patterns look like in these relationships, and then we touch on consent and sex in terms of the law, which is extremely brief. This section of the training is a suitable segue into the final section, which is sexual health. So by the time we've reached this point of the training, the young leaders are usually comfortable with each other and the facilitators. And as we know, it's especially important to keep a culture of focus on this topic in order to honour any cultural differences that may exist amongst the youth participating. Because not only do Aboriginal people have differences within the wider community, from the wider community, I mean, we also have differences within the Aboriginal community as you go region to region. So it's just important that we are mindful of that and we take that into consideration to each region we step into. It's here that we split the group into male and female because of the fact that Aboriginal people still follow traditional customs, our traditional customs, and we know that it's only appropriate to exchange this knowledge away from each of the genders. This particular acknowledgement again puts people at ease. This is the topic in the training what holds the most value. The reason for this is because sexual health is often shame, and it can be extremely overwhelming for a young person and it can be one of the biggest barriers to effective engagement with Aboriginal youth. But because of the holistic approach we took from the beginning and as we incorporated the cultural aspects all throughout, we hope that participants are now less likely to experience this barrier. So we play a video, we play several games that highlight how easy it is to spread STIs and BBVs, the importance of safe sex, and the process of a consultation or checkup and how to access this in their specific region.
Okay, I'm going to speed through this. I'm going to quickly introduce you to a little concept I like to call the sneaky veg approach to sexual health. And basically the rationale for designing the program in this way is that we have a recognition that STIs and BBVs are interconnected with a lot of other health issues affecting Aboriginal young people like alcohol and other drugs and mental health. And, you know, for instance, substance use and poor mental health might increase impulsivity, leading to, you know, decrease the likelihood of adopting harm reduction strategies like using condoms. So we branded the program as a youth health program focusing on health issues affecting young people. We titled it Young Leaders because it doesn't have sex in the title, it doesn't have the word sexual health in anything, and it has an emphasis on leadership. And then we just kind of snuck the sexual health stuff in there without drawing too much attention to it. It's just one part of youth health that needs to be talked about, and that's what we call the sneaky veg approach. Young people often feel shame in relation to STIs and BBVs, so it was intended that embedding it into a more holistic youth health program would be more socially acceptable and the uptake would be higher. And we found that to be really successful. And we've got a really big emphasis on leadership in this program as well, because we know that peers are credible, trusted sources of information that can reach people who might not be being reached by other means, family, friends, people in their community. They might be more interested in hearing this information from someone who doesn't live in their community or who they don't know. And, you know, peer educators are supported afterwards to run these trainings. They get $200 for every session they run. They get a training and work experience summary, are linked in with other training and conferences and programs and things. So we really try and help build their skills and knowledge in this area.
Oops, did I go too far? Oh, that's fine. This is some positive feedback that we've got from a few of the young leaders around the state. The only constructive criticism I've received is that the fact that in one of the training sessions, the room didn't have any windows and they didn't like that. So I saw that as a positive because it wasn't actually a criticism of the content. So again, just going back to incorporating culture and just how we've incorporated this into young leaders. So the training is best delivered by an Aboriginal trainer, both male and female. The use of Aboriginal specific resources, realistic case scenarios, and appropriate referral information is the most effective approach. So Aboriginal people are able to relate back to the information. We make sure we acknowledge and build on the strength that lies within the culture and community. We ensure the training caters to different learning styles, as in some regions, English isn't the first language. And we try to make it as hands-on as possible. And like Megan mentioned, the focus is on peer education and leadership. We know these young fellows learn better from their peers. Making sure the training content is adapted to different locations to account for the diversity within Aboriginal communities themselves. And I'll just leave up these key messages for working with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander youth, because with all this taken care of, you can expect better uptake and better engagement of Aboriginal youth.
Thank you very much, guys.
And that's us. Thank you.